Gabriel Garcia Marquez's masterpiece novel begins with these three sentences. Many years later, as he faced the firing squad, Colonel Aureliano Buendia was to remember the distant afternoon when his father took him to discover ice. At that time, Macondo was a village of 20 adobe houses built on the riverbank with clear water that ran along a bed of polished stones, which were white and enormous, like prehistoric eggs. The world was so recent that many things lacked names, and in order to indicate them, it was necessary to point. Magic. Magic is in the air. One's imagination is captivated by concepts of discovering ice, stones the size and color of enormous prehistoric eggs, and a world so recent many things lacked names. The ideas, which the reader should not assume to be literally true, begin the luminous chronicle of 100 years and 7 generations of the Buendia family in Marquez's beloved country of Colombia. Gabriel Garcia Marquez won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1982. He was perhaps the most renowned of a long line of esteemed magical realism writers, which includes José Luis Borges, Isabel Allende, and Toni Morrison. That's a list. This movement is connected to many important artistic, social, political, and psychological influences since World War I. Many of the sources flow out of ideas connected to Freud's work on dreams and the unconscious. And the term is known to be coined by the German art historian Franz Roh. Within literature, magical realism includes the ordinary and unusual elements of human existence, providing a wider representation of the possible. Magical realism expands beyond quantifiable or explicable experiences, dreams, desires, and myths mix. Questions, explorations, and answers intangibly flow together. You're not always sure what is what. And at times, with baffling confusion, history, the present, and the future weave in a gorgeous tapestry. Now, Unitarian Universalism, especially Unitarianism, have not always embraced dreams and metaphors. At times, folks have fiercely rejected them as hurtful. Although at least 100 years before magical realism, Unitarians celebrated efforts such as Thomas Jefferson taking scissors to a Bible, literally, and cutting out the miracle stories. Thankfully, the part of this commitment is that our religion has always, for a long time, been strongly influenced by beginning in the 18th century, the Enlightenment, with a central role for reason. And many times, in many ways, this does create a dynamic and healthy religion. So we give thanks for that. We have a history and current trends of being blessed with when science or psychology or civic society has new learnings, we integrate them into how we talk about our religious life. In Colombia right now, Kristen and I were noticing there are a number of movements now to add on to magical realism. Many of the new writers said we can't just get out of the drug war with telling stories that we're not sure if they're true. We have to tell the truth like it is. So it's a both and perhaps our most important example in the last 100 years that we should be proud of is that many top Unitarians were in the top circle in the 1920s around the Scopes monkey trial, saying evolution is real and it can and should be integrated into religious thinking. And that is obviously still not happening in many circles. But at times the pendulum has swung too far towards the rational, and at times we have demanded too much proof in our religion, and we have left our soulful cravings unfulfilled. And Gabriel Garcia Marquez led a literary movement which involves reality and magic. And we can continue to learn from magical realism to enrich our spiritual experiences. Marquez published his autobiography, Vivir para Contarla, which was translated Living to Tell the Tale. And for those who have always adored him, it's a fascinating look into the mind and perspectives of this man who gave so many gifts to the world. He reflects on his understandings of good fiction. And as with most human beings, seemingly small vignettes from growing up illustrate the development of his worldview. When his family was living on the Caribbean coast of Colombia, his father was a doctor. And one day, a highly distraught man, believing that someone had cursed him by placing a monkey in his abdomen, came to his father. Marquez's father felt that the case was beyond his own medical capacities, and he referred the man to a surgeon in the village. And the man went to the surgeon, who did not find the monkey, but did find a formless monstrosity with a life of its own. Reflecting back from adulthood, the possible medical or scientific questions are not what take up Gabriel's attention. The most significant learning for Gabriel was that the patient was convinced that the curse originated in the only location where it could be removed. In fact, everyone in that region knew that La Sierpe was a magical center of blessings and evil curses, and could only be reached by traveling through steaming bogs. The people of the town continually told stories of the land of La Sierpe, where snakes wore golden bells, and buried treasure was there, and there was a limitless expanse of hanging phosphorescent anemones. Another story comes from Gabriel's young adulthood. He was riding a train when a fawn, half man, half animal, came on board of the train as if nothing unnormal was happening. Nobody on the train seemed to notice anything out of the norm, but Gabriel saw the horns coming out of the head and smelled the stink of the pelt. He smelled the animal. When Gabriel got home, he couldn't sleep well. He talked to his roommate about the vision, and looking back, Gabriel said, "In the end, the essential thing for me was not if the fawn was real, but that I had lived the experience as if it were. And for the same reason, real or dreamed, it was not legitimate to consider this as a bewitchment of the imagination, but as a marvelous experience of my life." What are the marvelous experiences of your life? What are they? Hold them dear to your heart. These types of experiences help to explain how Marquez wrote 100 Years of Solitude, which is known as a giant metaphor encoding much of the entire history of the Americas. Marquez plays with images in a way that makes the reader think she might be starting off where the book of Genesis left off, discovering ice and founding a town in the swamps of Colombia. The Buendia family go back and forth between the known and the mysterious. Marquez completed the book in 67 when he and others had strong criticisms of modernization. and modernization of the town brings a plague of dead birds falling from the sky. It brings insomnia to everybody. The gorgeous stones, which looked like prehistoric eggs, are crushed into dust. Militarization brings the murders of many of the Buendia men and the death of 3,000 civilians in one massacre. Throughout his writing, Marquez tells many stories of people going to heaven and angels coming down. We see this in the story, a man, a very old man with enormous wings, where this rather decrepit old man is found face down in the mud with his big wings, a mess. Pelayo and Elisenda have ambivalent feelings about whether this angel has come to bring blessings. And although their sick child soon reduces his fever and regains his appetite, they still lock up the angel in the chicken coop and make a spectacle of him. They actually sort of low-level torture the angel so that they can make a show and they have the townspeople pay to see it. The angel shows amazing patience and eventually garners the energy to head on and fly away. Now, Marquez is committed to letting the reader interpret her or his own meanings of the stories, but with the fallen angel, perhaps we are to recognize that we see the holy in each other all the time. And sometimes we don't stop to be mindful of that reality, and sometimes we do not treat each other with adequate love and respect. You may have a different interpretation of the story. I encourage you to read it. It's a beautiful, short piece. In his autobiography, Marquez writes about growing up as a reader and how he came to understand that the best books are those which helped him to discover worlds he never knew existed within himself. The best books are those which helped him to discover worlds he never knew existed within himself. In other words, the plagues, the struggles between the ancient and the modern, the wrestling with good and evil, are all worlds that exist within the reader. They exist within you, and they exist within me. And we have different stories to tell that describe how these worlds happen. Marquez lives to tell his tales, which help us as individuals and communities to discover and see our worlds in new ways. As a very young reporter, he found living in Bogota to be a major treat for many reasons. One of them was at that time, Bogota was a world dominated by poets. Marquez says, we not only believed in poetry and would have died for it, but we also knew with certainty, as Luis Cardoza y Aragon wrote, poetry is the only concrete proof of the existence of man. The world at that time, he says, belonged to the poets. They believed the world belonged to poets. The good news is that even with our emphasis on reason, our theological roots also have deep connections with this type of insight. Ralph Waldo Emerson was a highly influential Unitarian thinker. In many ways, he and Gabriel Garcia Marquez arrived at the same conclusions. Emerson liked to say that the world itself is the great poem. The world itself is the great poem. In his 1844 essay, The Poet, Emerson wrote, the secret of the universe is profound. But who or what shall be our interpreter, we know not. For the experience of each new age requires a new confession, and the world seems always waiting for its poet. I'll bet you are a poet. And I'll bet you have a word or a phrase or a line or a poem in you, you might not call it a poem, but that has come out and you haven't seen for a while or you want to come out, but share your poetry, share your words. We're going to hear a poem from Gary in a little bit that he wrote for today in a song. In our religious tradition, we've embraced Robert Fulghum, Joseph Campbell, E.E. Cummings, many feminist theologians, highlighting the importance of myth and stories in our religious lives. We have tried to heed the call of Langston Hughes, who inspired us to hold fast to dreams, because without dreams, life is like a frozen field. As human beings, we are starved for narratives and stories. Do you know this, that feeling when you sit down to watch a movie in front of a video or in a movie theater? You sit down and you just think, yes, give me the story, show me, feed me. We need a lyrical religion to feed our souls. We need poetic, engrossing, mesmerizing spiritual language in our spiritual lives. As our world becomes more connected and in many ways smaller with globalization, we need more than ever to embrace and respect the stories, myths, and memories of diverse communities. Wade Davis is an ethnographer who studies indigenous peoples around the world. He reminds us that storytelling does change the world every day. He believes that hearing the stories of the world helps individuals to realize that the world into which you were born is just one model of reality. These other cultures are not failed attempts at being you. They are unique manifestations of the human spirit. Davis reports on a brilliant array of dreams, myths, and stories from people around the world, and he worries terribly that the sacredness of different cultures are being lost. Today, there are nearly 7,000 languages which are spoken worldwide, but only about a half of them are being taught to children. When a language is no longer spoken, it's very difficult for that culture to keep alive its unique wisdom and way of life. And we all lose. And in a time when the world needs all the good ideas which, when it can get, we're quickly losing cultural diversity and the wisdom of differing minds, perspectives, and experiences. Now, I believe that these issues of international economics, politics, religion are highly complicated, and I'm sure that many of us get overwhelmed and feel a bit incapable of having any effect on these current trends. What am I going to do about that? We know, though, that like many spiritual issues, we can always work in our local communities and on ourselves. Here we have some power. And I know a lovely story which has been developing for over a decade between Alex, a young boy, and his father, who've been telling a story together. Dad usually tells much of the story. It's not written down. It's like an epic between the two of them. They add on to it and move it in different ways. Together, over these years, the father and the son have been participating in a magical journey of imagination. I'm sure, in different shapes and forms, that many of your friendships or homes or families engage in some kind of similarly wonderful telling of stories. In our small groups, in our friendships, in all of our endeavors, we do better spiritually when we take the time to tell a story and listen. for spiritual growth and cultural survival, let us lose ourselves in our dreams. With stories about the good, the bad, and the ugly, we can discover and create new worlds within ourselves and with each other. Blessings be. Amen.